Harper Audio presents Solo, a memoir of hope by Hope Solo with Anne Killian. Read by Christina Delane. Chapter 1. Life Behind the Smiley Face. My first memories are a kaleidoscope of happiness. A small red house surrounded by a wooden fence. My free-spirited mother, Judy. My big outgoing father, Jerry. My older brother, Marcus. And me, baby Hope. On the outside of the fence, for everyone passing by to see, was a giant yellow smiley face. On the other side was a yard with a sandbox and a jungle gym. An English sheepdog named Charlotte. Rabbits and turtles and kittens. Out back, we played red light, green light, and had Easter egg hunts and birthday parties. Inside the house, my mother, a budding photographer, set up a darkroom to develop film, as well as a workout room where she practiced karate. I snuggled with my parents in their bed and watched TV. The cozy kitchen was where we had family spaghetti dinners. Smiley face on the fence. Happy people in the house. But as with so much of my life, the truth is a little more complicated. Clutter. Plastic toys, yard equipment, bikes, an old jalopy filled up our side yard. The neighbors complained, so my parents were forced to put up a fence to hide all our crap. My mom didn't like thinking the neighbors had won some kind of victory, so she painted that garish yellow happy face as tall and as wide as the fence would allow. The smiley face wasn't a reflection of internal happiness. It was a big fuck you to our neighbors. 2. How did we all arrive there, in a tract house on Marshall Street in Richland, Washington? My mother came for the same reason most people settled in Richland, because of the nuclear reactors. Richland, Washington looks like a normal American town, with neat rows of streets along the banks of the Columbia River. But behind that unremarkable facade is a complex history. A town created in the dark shadows of the American dream. During World War II, the U.S. government searched for an isolated swath of land with an abundant water supply and plenty of electrical power where it could hide a highly classified extension of the Manhattan Project. They found what they were looking for in an arid stretch of emptiness 200 miles southeast of Seattle. Hanford is in the high desert, on the confluence of the Columbia and Yakima Rivers, not far from the Grand Coulee and Bonneville Dams. It had water, electricity, and not much else. It was the perfect place to build the world's first plutonium production reactors. The U.S. government forced the relocation of about 1,500 residents from the small farming community of Hanford, which became the 586-square-mile site of the nuclear campus. Workers were imported and housed in tent barracks and later in small tract houses in nearby Richland. Within a few months, the workforce swelled to 51,000, and three nuclear reactors were producing the plutonium that, once shipped to Los Alamos, was used to build some of the first atomic bombs. Most workers had no idea what they were helping develop. No one was allowed to speak of it. Husbands and wives weren't even permitted to tell each other what their jobs were at Hanford. Residents had phony mailing addresses in Seattle, hung blackout curtains at night, and spoke in whispers inside their own homes. There were signs posted in public places. Careless talk costs lives. Old-timers tell stories that have been handed down over the years, of neighbors seen chatting in public before abruptly disappearing without so much as a goodbye. The secretive origins of Richland seem to have filtered down into the dusty riverbanks of the Columbia and infiltrated our ordinary lives.